Chapter 2. I made a mental note of that piece of information with a good deal of satisfaction. I could kill this miscreant now, if I got a chance, and no one would know it. But this very reflection made me so light-hearted that my conscience could hardly keep his seat, but was like to float aloft toward the ceiling like a toy balloon. I said, presently, "Come, my conscience, let us be friendly. Let us fly a flag of truce for a while. I am suffering to ask you some questions." "Very well. Begin." "Well then, in the first place, why were you never visible to me before?" "Because you never asked to see me before, that is, you never asked in the right spirit and the proper form before. You were just in the right spirit this time, and when you called for your most pitiless enemy I was that person by a very large majority, though you did not suspect it." "Well, did that remark of mine turn you into flesh and blood?" "No. It only made me visible to you. I am unsubstantial, just as other spirits are." This remark prodded me with a sharp misgiving. If he was unsubstantial, how was I going to kill him? But I dissembled, and said persuasively, "Conscience, it isn't sociable of you to keep at such a distance. Come down and take another smoke." This was answered with a look that was full of derision, and with this observation added, "Come where you can get at me and kill me? The invitation is declined with thanks." "All right," said I to myself, "so it seems a spirit can be killed. After all, there will be one spirit lacking in this world, presently, or I lose my guess." Then I said aloud, "Friend, there, wait a bit. I am not your friend. I am your enemy. I am not your equal. I am your master. Call me my lord, apostrophe if you please. You are too familiar. I don't like such titles. I am willing to call you, sir. That is as far as, we will have no argument about this. Just obey, that is all. Go on with your chatter." "Very well, my lord, since nothing but my lord will suit you, I was going to ask you, how long you will be visible to me?" "Always." I broke out with strong indignation, "This is simply an outrage. That is what I think of it. You have dogged, and dogged, and dogged me, all the days of my life, invisible. That was misery enough, now to have such a looking thing as you tagging after me like another shadow all the rest of my day, is an intolerable prospect. You have my opinion, my lord, make the most of it." "My lad, there was never so pleased a conscience in this world as I was when you made me visible. It gives me an inconceivable advantage. Now I can look you straight in the eye, and call you names, and leer at you, jeer at you, sneer at you, and you know what eloquence there is in visible gesture and expression, more especially when the effect is heightened by audible speech. I shall always address you henceforth in your OWNSNIVELINGDRAWL, baby." I let fly with the coal hod. No result. My lord said, "Come, come. Remember the flag of truce." "Ah, I forgot that. I will try to be civil, and you try it too, for a novelty. The idea of a civil conscience. It is a good joke, an excellent joke. All the consciences I have ever heard of were nagging, badgering, fault-finding, execrable savages. Yes, and always in a sweat about some poor little insignificant trifle or other destruction catch the lot of them, I say. I would trade mine for the smallpox and seven kinds of consumption, and be glad of the chance. Now tell me, why is it that a conscience can't haul a man over the coals once, for an offense, and then let him alone? Why is it that it wants to keep on pegging at him, day and night and night and day, week in and week out, forever and ever, about the same old thing? There is no sense in that, and no reason in it. I think a conscience that will act like that is meaner than the very dirt itself. Well, we like it, that suffices. Do you do it with the honest intent to improve a man? That question produced a sarcastic smile, and this reply, "No, sir. Excuse me. We do it simply because it is business. Apostrophe, it is our trade. The purpose of it is to improve the man, but we are merely disinterested agents. We are appointed by authority, and haven't anything to say in the matter. We obey orders and leave the consequences where they belong. But I am willing to admit this much. We do crowd the orders a trifle, when we get a chance, which is most of the time. We enjoy it. We are instructed to remind a man a few times of an error, and I don't mind acknowledging that we try to give pretty good measure. And when we get hold of a man of a peculiarly sensitive nature, oh, but we do haze him. I have consciences to come all the way from China and Russia, to see a person of that kind put through his paces, on a special occasion. Why, I knew a man of that sort who had accidentally crippled a mulatto baby. The news went abroad, and I wish you may never commit another sin, if the consciences didn't flock from all over the earth, to enjoy the fun and help his master exercise him. That man walked the floor in torture for 48 hours, without eating or sleeping, and then blew his brains out. The child was perfectly well again in 3 weeks. Well, you are a precious crew, not to put it too strong. I think I begin to see now why you have always been a trifle inconsistent with me. In your anxiety to get all the juice you can out of a sin, you make a man repent of it in 3 or 4 different ways. For instance, you found fault with me for lying to that tramp, and I suffered over that. But it was only yesterday that I told a tramp the square truth, to wit, that, it being regarded as bad citizenship to encourage vagrancy, I would give him nothing. What did you do then? Why, you made me say to myself, ah, it would have been so much kinder and more blameless to ease him off with a little white lie and send him away feeling that if he could not have bread, the gentle treatment was at least something to be grateful for. Well, I suffered all day about that. 3 days before I had fed a tramp, and fed him freely, supposing it a virtuous act. Straight off you said, oh, false citizen, to have fed a tramp. And I suffered as usual. I gave a tramp work. You objected to it after the contract was made, of course. You never speak up beforehand. Next, I refused a tramp work. You objected to that. Next, I proposed to kill a tramp. You kept me awake all night, oozing remorse at every pore. Sure I was going to be right this time, I sent the next tramp away with my benediction. And I wish you may live, as long as I do, if you didn't make me smart all night again, because I didn't kill him. Is there any way of satisfying that malignant invention which is called a conscience? Ha, ha. This is luxury. Go on. But come, now, answer me that question. Is there any way? Well, none that I propose to tell you, my son. Ass. I don't care what act you may turn your hand to, I can straightway whisper a word in your ear, and make you think you have committed a dreadful meanness. It is my business and my joy to make you repent of everything you do. If I have fooled away any opportunities, it was not intentional. I beg to assure you it was not intentional. Don't worry, you haven't missed a trick that I know of. I never did a thing in all my life, virtuous or otherwise, that I didn't repent of in 24 hours. In church last Sunday I listened to a charity sermon. My first impulse was to give $350. I repented of that, and reduced it 100. Repented of that, and reduced it another 100. Repented of that, and reduced it another 100. Repented of that, and reduced the remaining 50 to 25. Repented of that, and came down to 15. Repented of that and dropped to $2.50. When the plate came around at last, I repented once more and contributed 10 cents. Well, when I got home, I did wish to goodness I had that 10 cents back again. You never did let me get through a charity sermon without having something to sweat about. Oh, and I never shall, I never shall. You can always depend on me. I think so. Many and many's the restless night I wanted to take you by the neck. If I could only get hold of you now. Yes, no doubt. But I am not an ass. I am only the saddle of an ass. But go on, go on. You entertain me more than I like to confess. I am glad of that. You will not mind my lying a little, to keep in practice. Look here, not to be too personal, I think you are about the shabbiest and most contemptible little shriveled up reptile that can be imagined. I am grateful enough that you are invisible to other people, for I should die with shame to be seen with such a mildewed monkey of a conscience as you are. Now if you were 5 or 6 feet high, and, oh, come, who is to blame? I don't know. Why, you are, nobody else. Confound you, I wasn't consulted about your personal appearance. I don't care, you had a good deal to do with it, nevertheless. When you were 8 or 9 years old, I was 7 feet high, and as pretty as a picture. I wish you had died young. So you have grown the wrong way, have you? Some of us grow one way and some the other. You had a large conscience once. If you've a small conscience now, I reckon there are reasons for it. However, both of us are to blame, you and one. You see, you used to be conscientious about a great many things. Morbidly so, I may say. It was a great many years ago. You probably do not remember it now. Well, I took a great interest in my work, and I so enjoyed the anguish which certain pet sins of yours afflicted you with, that I kept pelting at you until I rather overdid the matter. You began to rebel. Of course I began to lose ground then, and shrivel a little, diminish in stature, get moldy, and grow deformed. The more I weakened, the more stubbornly you fastened onto those particular sins, till at last the places on my person that represent those vices became as callous as shark skin. Take smoking, for instance. I played that card a little too long, and I lost. When people plead with you at this late day to quit that vice, that old callous place seems to enlarge and cover me all over like a shirt of mail. It exerts a mysterious, smothering effect, and presently I, your faithful hater, your devoted conscience, go sound asleep. Sound? It is no name for it. I couldn't hear it thunder at such a time. You have some few other vices, perhaps 80, or maybe 90, that affect me in much the same way. This is flattering. You must be asleep a good part of your time. Yes, of late years. I should be asleep all the time, but for the help I get. Who helps you? Other consciences. Whenever a person whose conscience I am acquainted with tries to plead with you about the vices you are callous to, I get my friend to give his client a pang concerning some villainy of his own, and that shuts off his meddling and starts him off to hunt personal consolation. My field of usefulness is about trimmed down to tramps, budding authoresses, and that line of goods now, but don't you worry, I'll harry you on theirs while they last. Just you put your trust in me. I think I can. But if you had only been good enough to mention these facts some 30 years ago, I should have turned my particular attention to sin, and I think that by this time I should not only have had you pretty permanently asleep on the entire list of human vices, but reduced to the size of a homeopathic pill, at that. That is about the style of conscience I am pining for. If I only had you shrunk you down to a homeopathic pill, and could get my hands on you, would I put you in a glass case for a keepsake? No, sir. I would give you to a yellow dog. That is where you ought to be, you and all your tribe. You are not fit to be in society, in my opinion. Now another question. Do you know a good many consciences in this section? Plenty of them. I would give anything to see some of them. Could you bring them here? And would they be visible to me? Certainly not. I suppose I ought to have known that without asking. But no matter, you can describe them. Tell me about my neighbor Thompson's conscience, please. Very well. I know him intimately. Have known him many years. I knew him when he was 11 feet high, and of a faultless figure. But he is very pasty, and tough and misshapen now, and hardly ever interests himself about anything. As to his present size, well, he sleeps in a cigar box. Likely enough. There are few smaller, meaner men in this region than Hugh Thompson. Do you know Robinson's conscience?
Yes.
He is a shade under 4.5 feet high, used to be a blonde, is a brunette now, but still shapely and comely. Well, Robinson is a good fellow. Do you know Tom Smith's conscience?
I have known him from childhood.
He was 13 inches high, and rather sluggish, when he was 2 years old, as nearly all of us are at that age. He is 37 feet high now, and the stateliest figure in America. His legs are still racked with growing pains, but he has a good time, nevertheless. Never sleeps. He is the most active and energetic member of the New England Conscience Club, is president of it. Night and day you can find him pegging away at Smith, panting with his labor, sleeves rolled up, countenance all alive with enjoyment. He has got his victim splendidly dragooned now. He can make poor Smith imagine that the most innocent little thing he does is an odious sin, and then he sets to work and almost tortures the soul out of him about it. Smith is the noblest man in all his section, and the purest, and yet is always breaking his heart because he cannot be good. Only a conscience could find pleasure in heaping agony upon a spirit like that. Do you know my Aunt Mary's conscience? I have seen her at a distance, but am not acquainted with her. She lives in the open air altogether, because no door is large enough to admit her. I can believe that. Let me see. Do you know the conscience of that publisher who once stole some sketches of mine for a series of his, and then left me to pay the law expenses I had to incur in order to choke him off?
Yes.
He has a wide fame. He was exhibited, a month ago, with some other antiquities, for the benefit of a recent member of the cabinet's conscience that was starving in exile. Tickets and fares were high, but I traveled for nothing by pretending to be the conscience of an editor, and got in for half price by representing myself to be the conscience of a clergyman. However, the publisher's conscience, which was to have been the main feature of the entertainment, was a failure as an exhibition. He was there, but what of that? The management had provided a microscope. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.